Hi, hello, everybody. My name is Turk, and welcome back to the Grouch Couch. Thank you so much for continuing, joining us on this very special adventure that is Love, Death, and Dice, the Magical University. I'm very excited to be here doing this. This is episode 2. We'll see how long this series runs. That depends, of course, on how much you like it. So make sure to leave a like below and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Now, before we get into the details of today's episode, why don't we introduce ourselves and the player characters who they are playing today at the lads. Yes, hello.
Hello, I'm Fishy and I'm playing Merrow Wilson, a cursed child just trying to make it by in life.
Hello, I'm Kate and or Proteus and I am playing Tilly Lockwood, wizard.
Hello, I am Ray and I will be playing Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn, a teacher who just honestly, probably isn't supposed to be teaching.
And links to these guys and everything they do will be down in the description. As always, things are developing very well. You guys have just arrived at the Brimstone University of Mystics. And so we're going to get right into the show. As we last left off, the gates of Brimstone University swing open. They reveal a massive courtyard bathed in eerie, flickering light. The air hums with raw magic, thick enough to almost taste, but it shifts unpredictably. One moment crisp and refreshing, the next charged like a coming storm. But the courtyard here is alive with movement. Floating books flit between students carrying registration forms. A staircase on the far of the courtyard keeps changing directions, forcing students to chase after it, try to get to where they need to go. A group of first years are stuck in a teleportation loop, reappearing every 5 seconds in the same spot. And a sentient chalkboard seems to be arguing with itself about the correct spelling of a different student's name. At the center of it all, Headmaster Bartholomew Brimstone the 39th is grinning madly, his haft robe still burned in half, his staff still missing entirely, and he greets everyone. Up and loud as he stands up on the staircase, greets everyone loud down below.
Ah! New arrivals! All of you are still in one piece. Very good, very good. All of you have been assigned dormitories. I suggest all of you find yourselves at home and remember to attend your first class, for it may define your very existence in our world. Very good!
As you guys start clapping, he claps his hands and he disappears in a puff of smoke. And the books that were all around him kind of float around in circles and then hit the floor. Just a smattering of books. As you guys can see here in the quad, there is some kind of a process kind of happening, a sorting process where people are picking their classes and stuff like that. Students are running around. But Professor Wildthorn, of course, you remember that you were encouraged to show these guys where the dormitory is. But this is kind of an issue because, you see, the dormitory, it's not always where it should be. The dormitory entrance isn't where it is the previous day. As you look over on the side of the castle, of course, in true Brimstone fashion, the dormitory tower doesn't seem to be there.
I guess I'm going to head over to the chalkboard. Sentient chalkboard, because again, we are very close. Had many a talk in the late evening and so just kind of go over and go, Professor Scratch, can you possibly let me know which way the dorm has moved today? It would be a great help, and I'm going to try to basically persuade, charm, just kind of be charismatic, like, hey.
I think since you're getting assistance here, we can call it a charm roll of 4. Something very easy here.
My charm is my superb die, which is 20.
So you can I can take half. And just succeed.
And yeah. Just, cool. Then I'm going to do that.
Okay. The chalkboard. The chalk comes alive. And it begins scratching as fast as it can on the chalkboard. And as it scratches and writes, the old words that were on there disappear in like puffs of chalk that wisp away in magical sparkles. And the chalk writes, "What's up, Scoutmaster Wildthorn, Professor?" And then you say, can you help me find where it is? And it writes a big arrow on the chalkboard, and then the chalkboard rotates.
Much obliged. Thank you, Professor Scratch. Look forward to hearing your lecture this upcoming Saturday on the importance of cleaning one's erasers. Should be stimulating stuff.
I believe at that point the chalkboard goes into a full-on excited lecture in words on chalk about cleaning erasers and why it's important as you guys walk away, and it just writes faster. It tries to get it all out before you aren't even paying attention. But in Brimstone University fashion, the dormitory, it seems to be floating a little over 5 feet above the ground. And on the complete opposite side of where it's normally located. It's requiring all students to climb this rickety rope just to even get inside of this tower.
Can I use my winged boots to fly up it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Taking regular steps up nothingness.
So this is the first time you're using these boots. I do want you to make me a flight roll to see if it goes well for you. And we're going to call it a difficulty of 10.
10. I got a 4.
You got a 4. So you look down at your boots and you're like, we could do this. We don't need no rickety rope ladder. That sounds awful. You have wings, you realize. So you look at your shoes and they're charred and embery and almost leaking black ichor at your feet. And you're just like, let's go. And you click your heels together and they begin to flutter, but then they're like disobedient to you. Like you try to step forward to step up in this thing and your foot goes backwards.
That's not good. I'll take my anniversary token because I failed.
All right. Now, Tilly, were you saying something?
Professor, hooves aren't really made for climbing ropes.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm only about 3 feet tall. Would you happen to just, could you just toss me up there?
I'll do you one even better. If actually either of you wish to try this spell and charm, please feel free to do so. And so I kind of pull out my wand and say, Levitatus. And I should start to float ever so gently up and then step into the doorway.
Okay, wait, yeah, that's going to be a charm magic roll. Levitation, absolutely. Well, it could be flight, but I think that's charm magic.
It should be charm. Yeah, it's a charm spell.
So this should be easy for you, and your charm is a 20. I'm going to say it's a difficulty of 10 for all three of you. So if you want to just levitate up in there, you absolutely can.
Of course. Yes, I wish to show them how to do it. So I'm not going to try to do anything special with it. Just boom.
Nice. Now, as a teacher, do you get any bonuses you can give these guys?
I
got a 15.
Nice.
Hell yeah. Until he got a 10. They don't need help.
They don't need help. So these two astonish you, Professor, as they do the magic.
Levitatus. Black smoke kind of spews out of my wand, and that is what actually lifts me up and propels me upwards.
Levitatus.
All three of you begin to float. And you float right up and into the dormitories together. Very good.
Can I actually add a bit of a little bit of a thing? I continue to float up just a little bit higher than the door frame. And it's like, how do you make it stop?
Oh, you just point to where you wish to go with your wand.
Oh, okay. And I point down at the stoop and I can land very nicely on.
Badass.
Wonderful. Well done, both of you. Good job to both of you. Well done. Make sure that you should sign up for a charm class if you haven't already with a professor that's a scoutmaster. Could be fun. Anyway, this is where you will stay and sleep and hopefully not get into too much trouble because, again, you're still in college grounds, so there's certain rules that you have to abide by. No magic against other students unless in a classroom. Make sure that you keep your familiars, accidents cleaned and taken care of.
Professor Grandmaster Scoutmaster.
If a classmate says, I made the best potion in the world, smell this shit, think about it first,
I mean, I imagine if we learned just a little bit of knock canon knowledge, we could probably reverse any illegal substances from our blood.
That's don't jump ahead of the curriculum. Y'all have a good night. Sleep I'll see you at class tomorrow.
Moving forward, once you guys get inside, all right? You guys are met with a long, winding hallway. And it's lined with mismatched doors, some glowing faintly. And as you walk past them, other doors are whispering unintelligibly. A few doors, though, don't really appear to lead anywhere at all. But at the very end of the corridor, a single wooden door creaks open on its own as you approach, revealing the inside, as if welcoming you to your very new home. And this is for these two. We're going to come back to you, Professor.
Oh, we're roommates.
You'd think they'd make them co-ed. You'd think they would actually, you know.
Well, I guess it is Fire Brimstone Magical College of Wizardry. Things just kind of happen there. Yeah, Bum University. I guess we best find where our bums go.
All right.
As you guys step inside, you can see that the room in here is unexpectedly larger than what you would have thought. But it is kind of deeply strange. Clearly, this room is enchanted to accommodate all different kinds of magical students. As you step in and get a gander around, you can see that the furniture seems to rearrange itself randomly. One moment, the beds are on one side of the room, and the next, the beds are on a different side of the room. Also, there's a large enchanted window. And every time you look at this window, it seems like it's showing a different view of a different part of the university grounds. Like, the views are changing every single time. And there's a floating chandelier that hums like it's thinking. And if you stare at it too long, the lights flicker and go out. And the fireplace itself in here does give off a nice warm energy about the room, but the actual flames in the fireplace are purple. Now, each one of your belongings seem like they have already been stacked neatly by your assigned beds. But as you approach your assigned beds, you see a third bed that has an extra trunk that neither of you guys recognize. In the bed, it's unkempt. It's not made. It looks like it was, you know, recently slept in.
Ugh, I don't want to live with somebody messy.
Well, I guess we'll just have to make the best of it. Everything should be fine, right?
It should be. Mero's gonna go to sit down on his bed, and one of the legs are just gonna bust out, and his bed's gonna be all crooked.
Aww. Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that. And I feel like the bed whimpers a little bit as you say the leg breaks off. It kind of like,
it's like everything's made out of mimic here, Tilly. It's very scary.
Oh, well, in that case, I mean, I might as well try. I'm going to walk up to my bed. And I'm going to stroke and be like, hello there.
Nice.
Could I have some a bit more foresty,
this
please?
Is weird, but make me a charm roll. Difficulty 6.
All right.
That's a 4 and a 1, which makes it a
that
6.
That is a 6.
Which is perfect. You say forestry. What do you mean by that?
Right before our eyes, the bed is going to transform more into like a larger nest with like hay, bits of hay and dried grass and like soft big flowers.
Nice.
And, you know, I'm used to sleeping on more earth and ground than, you know, with a simple like linen like blanket, you know, a little sort of home.
I'm going to add to that. I'm going to say that magically there are like poles on the bed and vines grow up the poles and then flowers come out of them. And in the center of the flowers, they're like lighting up. But you get the sense that if you were to touch the flowers, you could turn the lights on and off on the flowers themselves.
Excellent.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to stroke my bed after that and be like, thank you, that is quite lovely.
The bed purrs a little bit. But now that you've turned it into a nature-y bed, it almost sounds like bees instead of a cat.
Mm. Mero's going to turn to his bed and kind of pet it and be like, come on, buddy, what can you turn into? And it just kind of growls a little bit, like, and I was like,
oh. I'm actually rather surprised to see quite a few of my belongings have made it there since we were thrown through a swirling butthole to get here that essentially apparently Samaru sent to our homes to collect our stuff. So I go through some leaflets and some drawings, and like I have stacks of paper and books from home. My fathers and uncles must have, when they found out, put a bunch of their old like warlock and necromancy and wizardry tomes in there, like they were expecting this to happen.
Nice. We love that.
Marrow goes to go open up one trunk, and it's just, there's nothing in it. And so he's just like, it's fine. He goes to open up his second one, and the only thing inside there are just some, like, old, like, papers and scripts with writing on them.
Nice.
That's it.
I would like to say that I actually, out of my little satchel that I've been carrying around, I pull out Moxie the Capybara fairy, and I place them into my little bed nest, and they kind of just snuggle in and then root around with their nose a bit.
Back to you, Wildthorn. Now, you see, you're not assigned to the student dorms. Instead, you've been given your own luxurious professor's quarters. But unfortunately, the school's idea of luxury is deeply questionable. As you eventually get over to your side of the school in the castle, you get into your professor quarters and get familiarized with them. And you see the ceiling is slightly too low in your office room, just kind of enough to make you feel like you gotta crouch a little bit, but sometimes you could stand up all the way. And the bed itself is actually suspended from the wall vertically, and you gotta pull it down to be able to sleep on it. There is no desk. Instead, there is a sentient quill that floats around the room, and it kind of whispers passive-aggressively to you, about grading papers and how you should be grading papers. Also, your wardrobe in this office room, it's been replaced by a wardrobe of full identical outfits, each slightly more ill-fitting and awkward than the last. One sleeve is bigger than the other sleeve, etc. And as you are inspecting this room's many, many quirks, there is a sharp knock at the door. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Please open the door.
Can I ask who it is?
It is Professor Caldora Hexworth.
Oh, one moment, Professor. I was already naked. Give me just a second.
Yes, please hurry. Should only take a second. We are magic, after all.
Of course, yes. No,
you hear her foot tapping the hardwood floor.
Right, let me just hurry. Calm down. I'm totally dressed, but I'm making a scene. All right, calm down. No, not hard. Don't be hard. Don't. Grandmother, puppy's dying. The world ending dramatically. Hello, Professor. Hi. Yes, good to see you.
You open the door. You see she's got a scowl on her face. She seems very impatient, and she says, I assume you're settling in. Please try not to set anything on fire, of course, unless you're meant to.
Of course. Anything else? Like, what's up?
In the middle of your anything else, she shoves into your hand a scroll that is labeled Lesson Plans Required in big red letters.
Yes.
And as you look at it, and you read that it says that, it immediately bursts into flames. And she goes, yes, that happens. Well, good luck today, Professor Thorne. Please follow the syllabus and teach your students well. We will be watching you.
Of course, and just for clarity, I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. It's Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorne. Love you. All right, Hexworth. You keep doing you, baby girl. All right.
And with that, she waves her wand around her head and she just vanishes.
Oh, my God. Shut the door. Take a second. Wait. Take my wand out. Point it at the door. Think better. Point it back. Oh, my God.
Nice.
Fuck, everyone here is so uptight. God damn. You can do this.
Very good. Okay, so you guys have the opportunity to relax here in the luxurious things that were provided to you for the night here by Brimstone's University of Mystics. You have the opportunity just to relax.
In this situation for college, where I'm basically having to watch, like, I would imagine that instead of me personally walking out and checking and walking by each door and making sure that everything sounds okay and is okay, like you have to do in college for that type of position, It's literally it's Billy the beta.
Just a floating ball of
just
water.
Just a floating blue ball. Just.
I will say, you two that are in your dorm together, Miro and Tilly, there is a large table in your dorm room, and it is outfitted with, you know, plates and forks and stuff like that, like room for eating. And as you guys are just sitting there, you begin to hear a noise, like an animal noise.
Hello?
Hoo-hoo!
Moxie, sick'em! No, I'm just kidding. No, I'll approach the sound. I'll get out of my bed where I've been cuddling with my wonderful little capybara.
Nice.
And I'll approach the sound.
We're going to do a check. Make me a brains check. Difficulty of six.
Brains it is.
That is a 14. That's really good. That's exceptional, actually. So, as you stand up, you see it right away. This noise. It seems to be coming from an archway. And as you get around the archway, you can see that perched atop of the archway is a stone-bound owl. It's a small owl-like figure. This one seems to be carved out of some kind of weird crystal. And as you get closer, it flutters its wings. And the crystal kind of, you know, makes that crystalline noise. And it goes, hoo-hoo!
Hello. Are you part of the decor normally? Are you some kind of fancy alarm clock?
Hello. A part of the decor normally, I am not. Not an alarm clock.
Well, then what can we do for you, my friend?
Hoo-hoo! For you, my friend, you cannot. But me, for you, I can.
And what would you like to provide?
Provide? Well, advice, knowledge, announcements.
What is your purpose at this moment, then?
Hoo-hoo!
What are you here to tell us now?
At this moment, it continues, and it's like repeating your accent back to you, like almost mocking you, like saying the exact words that you're saying, but adding and subtracting onto them. But it's like, my purpose, this moment, mortal forms require sustenance.
Hoo-hoo!
Ah, dinner! Yes, lovely. When is dinner, and how do we acquire it?
Now, here, your room. It's late.
Oh, you're here to take a dinner order. Marrow, are you hungry, darling?
Dinner order. I will take...
I am parched. Parched,
what
yes.
would you like? The beautiful owl would like to take our dinner order.
Can I get two French toasts with eggs over easy, two sausage links, a side of bacon, and sourdough toast?
Two French toasts, two eggs over easy, two sausages, and a side of French toast.
Hoo-hoo!
Can do.
You forgot the bacon.
I forgot the bacon. Can do.
And could I just have, like, a soup? If you have minestrone, that'd be lovely. Some soup, some bread, and a nice little mug of tea, please.
Soup, minestrone, coming up. With tea.
And it like flutters its wings. It glows a little bit, like this crystal like glow of like this beautiful magic. And before you can even turn around, you look at the table that I previously explained, and the food is already there.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm going to call after it. I know it's already gone away, but thank you, owl friend. Lovely to have you.
I'm here. I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, it is part of the decor then.
Decor? Not decoration, no.
Alright, so we'll sit down to a lovely meal then.
Okay. Any questions? Anything? Feel free to ask. Just got a call.
When do classes start? Tomorrow?
In the morning.
And what time do they begin?
Bright and early. When you awake. Sunrise.
Okay. Mara, do you have any questions for the owl?
Can we set an alarm clock 30 minutes before class starts? With the bird?
We'll set an alarm clock 30 minutes with the bird before class starts.
Fantastic. You better hurry
Fantastic.
Up.
Fantastic.
Food's getting cold.
Food's getting cold.
Yep, no.
Food's getting cold.
I'm going to sit down with Marrow then. We'll enjoy our meal.
Very good. You guys begin eating. We're going to cut over now to Professor Wildthorn as you're sitting on the floor in your awkward room.
So crisscross applesauce, middle of the floor. I've moved all the furniture to the edges of the walls. So there's absolutely, it's very like almost serial killer-esque. We'll call it that. And But it's weird because from that, it's almost like from where I've been sitting for, I don't know, about 10 minutes, nature has, it's almost like nature exploded in my room. There's a full on like tree growing in the corner with a canopy. There's vines, there's undergrowth, there's a couple of different ferns, there's mushrooms of different sizes. What was a bed has now decayed and turned into just a giant mushroom. And so I've been just kind of, and I haven't actually been trying. I've just been sitting here actually just cleaning out my pipe, and I look up.
So this is like accidental magic that's happening around you?
Accidental. It's kind of what I'm teaching or gonna try to teach.
Yeah, very quiet tap at your door.
Billy kind of goes under the door and like peeks.
Since you could send him off to do whatever you want him to do, right? That's kind of like the rules of the system. So he rolls back to you and tells you that he sees an owl.
I'll open the door with my wand, or just actually not even with my wand. Like, I go to grab the wand and I barely do it, and the kind of the door opens open. Hello. Yes. Hello.
As you look out, it's not like a nice crystalline, you know, owl that the students have. It seems to just be an old rusty stone owl. It's not even a personal owl in your room. It's like on the wall across, and it twirls its head in a complete circle and then sees you and just like blinks its eyes at you.
Who do you?
Who back to you?
Sweet.
Well, you need something.
What you offering, friend?
Yeah, I'm offering friendship, I think.
Hell yeah. You know, I've met many owls, honestly. First wooden one, stone. Yeah, pretty cool though.
I wood, stone. I have advice, thoughts, processes. I can get you food, directions to the bathroom.
Oh, I think Brimstone mentioned this. Oh, yeah. So can I get for dinner? I'm going to take the Blue Dragon hot pot. And,
for dinner. Blue Dragon pot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Blue Dragon and then pot. Also, like, what?
Blue Dragon pot?
The Blue Dragon hot pot.
That's what it says.
Yep. And so, like, get it? Because it's like an ice dragon, but I'm putting it in hot soup. It's going to taste ice. Great.
Okay. Yep.
There you go. Yes. You're figuring it out with me. All right. And then I'm also going to need 2 gallons of hot cocoa.
Oh, okay. 2 gallons of cocoa.
Absolutely. And 1 marshmallow.
1 marshmallow. Okay.
Feeling spicy tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Spicy. You turn around, you look in your room. As you shut the door, there is a cauldron in the shape of a blue dragon. There is a bag of ice. There is 2 wooden buckets full of powdered cocoa and 1 giant marshmallow.
I immediately giggle and go, perfect.
Nice. You get closer to the marshmallow, and the marshmallow is spicy.
Fantastic. Even better. You just hear, I guess you would cut to black, and the outside of the room, the last thing the owl hears is like, all right, let's get cooking.
He's going to do so good this year.
Okay. You guys end your night. Mero, you find it difficult to sleep on a bed that's kind of crooked, but after a while you adjust. You've slept in worse. You absolutely have. But as you're sleeping, I need you to make me a grit roll, please. Just do me a grit roll. I'm not going to give you a target.
God, this is a 3.
That's a 3. Okay. All right. As you sleep, Mero, the room around you is silent. Tilly's deer feet kick a little bit on the hay, and the enchanted window flickers between moonlit forests, stormy seas, and a swirling void of nothingness before the window sets down on pure darkness. A deep chill creeps through the dormitory here, and as you are awake but also not awake, the darkness curls around your bed like fog. To the fire in the hearth, it's still burning bright. You can kind of see through the fog like purple. And then there's a whisper. Soft at first, like the rustling of old parchment. Then louder, closer, closer. And you hear, you do not belong here. And then you blink. And then suddenly, You're no longer in the dormitory. You're standing in the grand hall of Brimstone's University, but it's empty, hollow, rotting. The floating chandeliers hang crooked and cracked, their flames cold and gray, the walls pulse as if breathing. The massive stone doors at the end of the hall are missing, revealing only an endless void beyond. The sky above is not a ceiling that you remember, but a swirling abyss of black mist flickering with distant shapes, figures, shadows, things watching. Then you notice something. Something worse. The paintings along the walls, the once proud portraits of the headmasters and founders are empty. The figures that should be in those portraits are gone. No, they're not gone. You turn around, they're standing behind you. The voices, a sea of faceless robed figures stand at the edge of your vision. When you turn your head, they disappear. You can see them in your peripherals. They watch you in eerie silence. They do not move. They do not breathe. Then one of them steps forward. Its robes are tattered black as a starless night. But its hands are bones. Its jaw unhinges slightly as it speaks in your very own voice. And it says, "You're already dead." You try to move, but your legs do not respond. You look down and you see your own skeletal fingers, your arms stripped of flesh. Your reflection in the polished floor is nothing more than a skull. Once again, the skeleton says, "You were never meant to last this way, but you will last forever." The faceless figures tilt their heads in unison. Then they begin to laugh, low at first, then higher, hysterical, and then mocking laughter. The walls begin to close in, the ceiling cracks and crumbles, the shadows lurch forward, and you awaken, gasping, drenched in cold sweat, and the whole room is quiet. The enchanted window, it's reset to a peaceful moonlit meadow. And on the desk, right next to your bed, is a single scrap of parchment that you do not remember having. It now sits there. As you pick up the parchment and read it, there's one single word written in black ink that drips fresh. And as you read the word, you hear the word out loud, like coming from a vent. It says, "Soon."
Soon.
Tilly, you hear this word out loud. Soon. It awakens you from your peaceful slumber.
Mero, you all right?
Oh, you know, nightmares. If you ever had a chance, would you try to live forever?
I don't know. It depends. If I had accomplished everything that I wanted to accomplish, then probably not. But if I still had more to do, I might seek out a longer life.
But what if you didn't have a choice and you were more or less cursed to live forever?
I imagine I'd make peace with it eventually.
I don't think peace is meant for our kind of life, Tilly. And Meryl's just going to kind of roll back over away from Tilly. And just kind of like, just like sit there and tether at the crumpled note that he has.
Nice.
Just kind of tearing it into little pieces of like anxiety and nervousness.
Love that. I love that. The other two sleep like gall darn babies, as if magically a sleeping spell has been put on you. You sleep beautifully, like as if you were given magical slumber to help you awaken at the break of daylight to begin the day. It's beautiful.
Can I actually say that I wake up before the break of day because deer don't require that much sleep. Deerling don't require much sleep. So I whisper to the bird early in the morning, "Hey, good morning. Could we have an eggs benedict? A couple of small pieces of bread, some assorted juices, and a large helping of bacon, sausages, fried potatoes, and why not a tortilla on the side?"
"Tortilla. I will send down to the chefs immediately."
"Hoo-hoo.
Everything else has been added to your table."
"Hoo-hoo.
Thank you."
Talking in a hoo voice, his head spins on the archway, and he says,
"Today, we will be attending our first classes. Don't be late. Your class schedule has been added to your pockets."
"I'm wearing a dress. I don't have pockets."
"Intriguing."
This is just that awful reoccurring nightmare where I'm trying to find my class, but I can't figure out what my schedule is.
Right.
So after the bird tells us that our food has arrived, I walk to Mero's bed because I know he had a rough night, and I lightly stroke his shoulder and I go, "Mero,
Driver.
Oh, hello. I've got this breakfast if you're interested."
"Oh, that's great.
Our second day begins in the morning as you two sit at the table together. You're eating food and doing whatever you like, of course, discussing tortillas and what have you. And both of you guys pull out your class schedules. They are on these full-on scrolls that you can open. They've got scroll pieces on both sides. And as you're looking at your class schedules, they seem to be rotating magically. And each different class schedule just appears at the top. And there are a bunch of different classes. Now, you currently can't see the class that Wildthorn has discussed to you yet, but there are a bunch of other classes for you to take as the first one in the morning. As if, magically, whichever class you decide to take of importance will kind of be there at the time that you need to take it. Now, the five classes that are on your schedules, of course, are Intro to Fireproofing 101, Summoning for Beginners, Cursed Objects and You, Enchanted Cooking, Time Travel Ethics, and of course, the sixth one is Unethical Necromancy.
Tilly, what's your first class?
I'm thinking Cursed Objects and You.
Yeah, Cursed Objects and Me.
Oh, that sounds like your life story from what I've accrued.
Well, bad things happen to everybody, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's fair, but yeah, I'd like the idea of no object is truly cursed. You know, it's just in how you spin it. It's just in how you treat it. You know, you could make a curse work for you with the right know-how.
Wish I kind of had that optimism.
I mean, it's the same thing with, like, if you have a spell book, right? Like, you take this spell book, and I reach over to, like, where my bed is, and I bring out a spell book of one of my father's spell books, and I'm like, now if you flip the book upside down and perform the ritual backwards, you can make the same exact thing happen as if you performed it normally. Some people say you'll get a curse out of it, but I feel like if you had enough conviction, you could make it happen correctly.
What was that spell that Grandmaster taught, or Scoutmaster, Philosopher Master Scout? What was his name? Is a teacher.
Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn.
Yeah, he taught us a spell yesterday.
Levitatus.
I can never fucking pronounce a word backwards, even if I've ever attempted it in my entire life. But Mero is going to pronounce that backwards.
And make me a charm roll. Wave your wand and make me a charm roll. Levitatus. What would that be backwards? Class, you want to help?
Siotabal.
What did you get? A 12?
12.
Okay. Very good. So you wave your wand. And you say, Siotabal. And you wave your wand.
Siotabal.
And as if magically, because you succeeded on this, you disappear through the floor. You are sitting at the table with Tilly, and you just disappear through the floor, and you land at a table in a dorm that was underneath you. And sitting at the table all around are two other witches and two other wizards. And as you land there, they go, hello? Did the owl summon you?
No, the owl didn't summon me. Hello, Merrill Wilson, upstairs neighbor. Man, isn't magic funny? And then I'm going to try and use I don't even remember what it was. Anyways, you guys enjoy your breakfast. Mero's gonna like grab an orange and just like bite it completely, peel and all, not like just being like, I don't even like oranges. And then he's gonna kind of like run out of the room.
If you want to try, you could roll charm again to go back up to the floor.
Levitatus.
Difficulty 10. That's a 5.
Fuck
you. Everything's normal. You bite the orange, you go, Levitatus, and nothing happens, and you pick up your robes and then just run out the door. What do you got,
Ray?
Oh,
Moosey.
Is this thing in the system, like, because he's cast it now, like, a couple of times, does that DC lower eventually?
Yeah, it does indeed. Okay. Yeah, does indeed. But even still, with a 5, same
thing. Oh, yeah, no, so I was just curious how that
you
worked.
Run out the door, just tripping. Okay.
And then run all the way back upstairs and then back into the room and be like, Tilly, you would not believe what just fucking happened.
Oh, you have to tell me. This sounds wonderful.
Well, the downstairs neighbors are awesome. Bites a piece of orange. So-
You guys have your first class selected. Now, we cut over to Wildthorn. Wildthorn, you've woken up. You've put on your robes. They're real weird fitting, like... for some reason, this time around, there's like way too much bosom and way not enough stomach. So it's like real tight and your bosom is huge and it just doesn't fit right. And you're like, what in the heck? Now, before you leave your room,
breast implants.
Is there anything?
Yeah, no, literally. Get out of my head. Please get out of my head for just a second. That'd be great.
Is there anything you want to do before you exit your room? Okay, you open the door to your dorm. And as you do,
morning at Brimstone.
You're immediately greeted by Headmaster Brimstone the 39th, laying only in his tidy whities on the floor in front of your door. Sleeping.
Morning, Grandmaster.
He awakens, and as soon as he sees you, he magically appears right behind you, and he goes,
do you know who stole all of the oranges from the kitchen?
I have it on good authority that the person you're looking for is Vita.
Vita.
Min-C. I will get this Vita.
Yeah. Vita, she won't know. M-C is the full name.
The Wrath of Bartholomew Brimstone the 39th. The citrus makes noise. And I will have
Vita
it.
M-C.
Vita M-C. Vita M-C. Why does that sound so familiar? I know that person.
Well, thank you. Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn, hope you enjoy your first day. I was actually here to tell you, and I didn't want to miss you on your way out. I was here to tell you that it has been requested that you actually sit in on the cursed objects in you class this morning before you teach your own class.
Sure. Yes, I would love to. Absolutely. Good. So
Professor Hex was going to come, but she seems a little crabby these days, and sometimes I like to handle things myself. So here I am.
Thank you, Headmaster. We will do our best to shape the fragile minds to do things good.
Very good. Then he appears right behind your beta fish, and he goes, Icky, cheeky, choo. Icky, cheeky, choo. Well, I'll see you next time. Furthermore, and he vanishes, and all that's left behind is a floating pair of undies.
I'm going to grab them, throw them back in the room, and then close the door and go.
As you're leaving, your owl's head spins.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to call you Carl. Good morning, Carl.
Well, I've never had a name before in all my years. Thank you.
That's really sad. Anyway, have a good day, Carl. See you tonight.
Carl. Oh.
Carl. As you're walking away, he's just saying his name in different cadences. Carl. Carl.
It's official. I will die for this fucking owl. cool. Glad we established that very early on.
So you three almost magically round your way through the windy, windy columns and castles and archways of this beautiful area, eventually making it to the cursed objects in you classroom. Now, the door to the classroom is unlike the others. It's warped, twisted, and converted with weird, strange, glowing runes flickering between different forms, sometimes wooden. The plaque above the door constantly changes as well. It changes names, as if the classroom itself is never quite sure what it should call itself. Inside, you can see for a second, it looks cold in there.
Good morning, Mr. Wilson. Good morning to you, Miss Lockwood.
Morning.
I hope you
Good morning, Thorn, Professor Master Scout.
Professor Scout Master. Wildthorn.
Wildthorn Scout Professor Master.
No. We're not. Let's do this right. Professor, say it with me.
Professor.
Very good. Scout Master.
Scout Master.
Wild.
Wild.
Thorn.
Thorn.
Scout, Professor, Scoutmaster, Wild Thorn.
Scout, Professor, Scoutmaster. I lost track.
Ooh, yeah.
Weep-a-boo.
Very good, Mr. Wilson. Very good. Well.
While they're doing this, I've entered the classroom.
Nice. When you try to enter, the runes reject you.
Oh, that's lovely. Cue stroking the door. I'm going to stroke the wood. I'm gonna stroke the wood and be like, what does it take to get inside your head, darling?
Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn, you see a witch with a wand in her hand. Instead of using magic, she is rubbing the wood of the door.
That's very good, Miss Lockwood. What are you wanting in this moment? Describe it to me out loud. What do you wish would happen?
Well, I'd ideally like the door to unlatch and swing open and allow us to enter the classroom.
So what would you say to it? What would you do? Think it. Don't, you know, and do it. Don't just imagine it in your head. Just manifest it.
All right. I'm going to internally manifest. Hello, you ruggedly strong piece of old wood. I would love to go to class, you know, show my family that I'm going to be just as powerful as any of them. Like, listen, you could let me in, couldn't you?
Yes.
Am I doing magic wrong?
And so I can actually, as part of my abilities, I can roll my stat die and magic die and add them together and put it towards Tilly, whatever type of check Tilly needs to succeed here.
Nice.
I imagine it's charm since I'm trying to woo the pants off of the door.
Sure. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a charm roll. Since you're trying to woo it, it's going to be difficulty 18.
Wow.
Well, that was an 11.
Plus Professor Wildthorn's roll, which is a 17. In total, you got a 28, even though that was a hard roll. The door shudders at your very existence. You seem to woo the door. The runes on the door grow into a face like no other. A face with a smile and a scowl. A face like it's flirting back at you. A face with eyebrows. It looks like, you know, you ever seen that fuckboy pose on TikTok? The door is doing that with its very own hinges.
Very good! Well... done.
The door does not speak, for it has no vocal cords, but it opens, and as it does, it winks.
It groans. It groans.
I give it a polite little tap on, like, playful slap on one of its cheeks on the door and be like, I'll see you later, and just continue on into the classroom.
Nice. You walk in through the door, and the door slams behind you and turns back into runes, leaving the other two outside.
Well, Mr. Wilson, looks like you need to figure out how to get into the room there.
Quickly, Wilson, roll me a brawn check. No, sorry, grit. Roll me a grit check.
Brawn?
Grit.
Grit. Yeah, this is a six.
There's a vent down below to the right of the door. You hear a whisper coming from the vent.
Okay. Look out.
Scout Professor Scoutmaster Thornwild, what if we tried using the little tiny trapdoor right next to the big door? The one that talks.
Do I perceive?
You do not hear anything? The whispering talking. You do not. This student is pointing at a vent.
Mr. Wilson, what do you hear? Tell me. What is it saying?
Well, it's telling me to use that door to go over there. So I'm gonna try that one. You know, I mean, if the door, you know, things around here talk to us, whether we like it or not, then, you know, let's go see what's got to say.
You know, yes, that's, yeah, things normally don't talk to people here.
You get down on your knees, Marrow. You pull the door off, the vent door off of it, and you see that you might be a little too large to fit in there.
Can I
go with your gut? First thing that comes to your face, right here. First thing that pops in your skull.
Well, Scoutmaster, what's like a minimize spell to make myself smaller?
Smaller.
Smaller.
Make me a flight check. It's gonna be flight. This is movement. You change the size of your body. Flight.
I can help.
Difficulty.
I'll
eight.
Try to help. I'm
that's
bad
three.
At flight.
I literally rolled two ones.
Plus four.
That's a seven. We've got adversity tokens.
Can I use my adversary? Yeah, can I use my adversity token?
I'll spin some.
I got the ruse right up here.
Nice.
You may discard any number of adversity tokens, each token adding plus one to the roll. All I need is one. As with age bonuses, these are little lucky rolls. So I just dropped the one that I won earlier, or Professor makes it happen.
You go smaller, it doesn't work, and then you shake your wand, and when you spend your adversity token, some black ichor comes out of your wand, like you're forcing it out, like you're mad at it. You're like, come on! And it pushes on your body, like, and pushes you down. You're real small. And then you walk over, and you realize that the grate is now above you, and you jump up and grab the ledge and pull yourself into the grate. And you turn around, and you see huge Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn standing there.
Me.
Very good. The vent
at
here.
At this point, Mara's gonna like hop up on top of his fire ferret, and then we're just gonna kind of like ride the fire ferret into the vent.
Nice. Till you're on the inside, and you see a bright fire coming from inside the vent, and then the door falls off of the vent. And then out jumps Marrow. And as you jump out of the vent, there's just black ichor all over the floor. And then from the ichor forms Marrow. Back to normal size.
That was fantastic. How did you do that?
Scout Professor Wildthorn taught me a new spell. It's called Smaller. And it just kind of makes yourself smaller. Are we going to talk about the fact that you've seduced two pieces of furniture since we've been here?
Three if you count the broom shop.
Moving on, we cut out to the outside with Professor Wildthorn and the door. You understand these runes. You know how to just open the door.
Yeah, we've been. It's like show my teacher's badge.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I know this. You like tap your wand on some of the runes and then the door just opens for you. Just works out, and you just walk inside. Now, anticlimactic there on your part, but you know, whatever.
No, I think that's what great. I actually thought was going to happen. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Point is, Marrow, if it comes from nature, I can woo it.
Inside the room is cold, too cold. The walls are lined with shelves of ominous-looking trinkets of all different kinds, and each one of them humming with a different kind of energy or glowing a different strange mystical color. Some objects, though, are locked in glass cases, while others are floating freely, and some of them are wrapped in chains of glowing sigils all around. The light in the room is never consistent. It flickers between warm candlelight and unnatural green-blue light, depending on who is up and walking around in the room. There is a massive chalkboard at the front of the room that looks familiar to earlier that day. Writing on the chalkboard says, "If you hear whispers, do not respond." Underneath that, the chalkboard writes out, "Do not name the doll." After that, it writes out, "Do not let the mirror know that you see it." And, of course, there are seats and desks all about.
Well, I've already taken my seat, so I'm kind of smack dab in the middle of the classroom at a long table with a couple of chairs around me.
To the next to Tilly. Just like...
And I look to, like, where next to the chalkboard there's, like a couple of stools off to the side for, like, you know, the... I guess sit-in teacher or however. I don't know why I'm here. I'm just here.
Nice. Entering into the room is your guide to chaos, Professor Drelga, as the chalkboard writes on by itself. She is a short, hunched, and perpetually exhausted-looking person. Her hair is a wild gray mess. Her robes are patchworked from different fabrics, of course, likely from old protective garments or runes of some kind. As she turns and looks at the class, you can see that her left eye is completely missing and replaced with a small swirling void that also seems to occasionally blink oddly. And she speaks slowly.
I want to be this woman.
She speaks slowly, carefully, like someone who has survived for way too many magical disasters. And as she sighs, Professor Drelga says, "Welcome to the cursed objects in you. If you're in this class, it means you are either very brave or very, very stupid." And she waves her hand and a wooden cabinet slams open on its own, revealing a collection of some of the worst mistakes in magical history. Professor Drelga says out loud, "My way of teaching is a hands-on experience. The best way to learn is by doing, or in this case, by touching. Go ahead, students, pick one." And a bunch of the students stand up and pick different cursed objects to study, and inevitably regret touching. As you two stand up and approach, you can see there are a couple of different objects left in there. There is a mirror, a mask, a doll, a coin, a candle. As you guys are choosing and looking through the thing, she walks back over to Thorn. She sits down next to you and she says, "You must be careful with these students. They are powerful. Mm-hmm. Some dark. Some light.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Last year at the university, there were mistakes, rumbles, deaths. If you come across any kind of odd students, darkness, unspoken things."
Right. So, like, if I was to meet a student who was, like, hearing voices in their, like, head and, like, from different areas or items, like, I would definitely need to report that to you. Correct.
Yes.
Yes, I will let you know right now, Professor Drelga. I have not met a single student that meets that description as of yet. But if I meet one that just really creeps me out in a bad way, I'll let you know.
Good. Good. All right, everyone grabs their objects and you guys sit down. It looks like Mero, you have grabbed the doll, and Tilly, you've grabbed the mirror.
But I was smart and I picked it up with a bit of fabric instead of my own bare hand.
Nice.
Drelga hands.
Walks over to you first, both of her eyes wide open, as she looks at you in the mirror, Tilly, and she says, "Whatever you do, do not wink at the mirror. The last student who winked at this mirror never stopped winking." And as you look into the mirror, you can see it's a small handheld mirror that's cracked. And no matter where you turn it, your reflection in the mirror is always looking directly at you. And your reflection blinks completely out of sync from your blinking. Which is odd, because you never see yourself blink. But in this mirror, you can.
What wonderful eyelids I have.
Yes. Why, perchance, did you pick this mirror, Tilly? Vanity?
No, I don't think so. I think it was more the fact that there was a rule on the board about a mirror that intrigued me to it, that I'd like to learn more about the thing that it had a direction against.
Okay. And she walks down to the next person, who happens to be Mero. And as soon as she sees you holding the doll, she says, "Do not name that doll."
Hey, is this doll's name Artemis? Because that's what it says on it.
This small handmade doll has button eyes, stares at you. When you say, "Is this doll's name Artemis?" it whispers back in your ear and it says,
"Mero Wilson."
Yeah, that is my name.
It tilts its head as if slightly amused.
I think I found a new friend.
Professor, do you care to elaborate?
I've only heard of what happens when you name the doll. I am afraid to say its name.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to, like, interrupt your class.
Pulses a little bit, and every candle flickers. Every floating quill stops in midair, and the doll tilts its head. Its button eyes glisten. and it reflects something that isn't in the room, and it whispers, once again, your name.
Mara Wilson.
And the temperature drops, the air grows thick, and the doll moves in your hand. Not much, a tiny twitch of its hand, a barely noticeable shift of its posture, but it wasn't moving before. And Professor Drelga speaks up. She slams a gloved hand on your desk, and she starts muttering a string of incantations. And the runes on the wall glow green, and she goes, "It's not working. It's not working." She gestures sharply, and the ring of protective sigils flare. And for a second, it almost looks contained in the doll. And once again, it says,
"Mara Wilson."
Once it does, the barrier of sigils around the room cracks. And you feel something, Mero, in your body, cold, something curl around your wrist like an invisible chain tightening. The reflection on the mirror now shows Mero's face. Every reflection in the room now shows Mero's face. Everyone in this room no longer has shadows except Mero. And his shadow is the biggest of them all. In your hand, the doll says it one more time.
Mara Wilson.
This time it disappears out of your hand. Congratulations, Mara. You now have a permanent problem. And she jumps into a cabinet and shuts the door. She's gone.
What an absolute... I hate you. Can I go over to the cabinet?
Still messing Wild Thorn. This is what's supposed to happen.
Everybody gets one action.
We get an action. Okay.
Everybody gets one.
Okay.
I'm just going to, because we need to put a timetable on this, so everybody gets one thing.
So the doll has disappeared. That's what I'm hearing. The doll is gone.
I'm going to spend one of my adversity tokens. And with my intuitive feat, I can spend one of those to ask the GM about my surroundings, an NPC, or the like, and the GM must answer honestly.
Nice. What's your question?
So I'm going to try to intuitively figure out this is the first class. These items should not be this bad. Is this all for show? I want to know again, like, is there a simple solution to this, or is this something to actually like worry about? Because to me, in my head, I'm like, there's no way this teacher is just gonna let these students take the most awful thing possible.
Bum. Brimstone's University of Mystics. Okay. This is a real problem. The cursed character picked up a cursed item and did the cursed thing.
But
this
still,
is a problem.
This is like the first class. Like, this is like the equivalent of taking a kindergartner to school and being like, "All right, kids, so here's a gun.
Don't run with scissors, children." Hands them shears. I get it, but that's what's happening here. We're in fantasy world. The whiteboard said, "Don't name the doll." Fishy said, "Its name is Artemis." Bad.
It has the name on the doll. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, so I don't know if that's
it's not a problem that can't be solved, right?
Okay, so I guess that's what I want to use that point then, is like, is there a way to intuitively recognize as a teacher what we need to do here before things get bad.
As previously stated, you can see that Mero's shadow has grown huge. And intuitively, as a teacher, you know that something to do with darkness. I guess as a help, light may help you.
Gotcha. I'll my last little bit is yell out, "All right, do you give in to the darkness or do you show the light? It's your choice, Mr. Marrow."
"Well, there's not a lot of darkness around me as far as I can see, so I'm going to have to choose the light."
All right. What do you do, Marrow? Anything? Anything to prep here?
Remember what I told you.
If there's any way... right. Smaller. And then cast himself smaller.
Which, if you think about it, since he's smaller, his shadow would cast potentially less.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Okay, this is, again, a flight roll this time. half you did successfully before. We'll call it, what, three? Beat a three.
Sick. I rolled a three.
Nice. Okay. That's a three. Perfect. You, smaller. Iker comes out and gets you smaller in the room. All the other students back up to the edge. Tilly, what do you do?
I'm going to pull out my wand and I'm going to do a little twirly-whirly and keep in mind what Wildthorn said about manifest what you want. And I'm using the wand as a focus point because at this point it's an emergency, so I should probably use something that will heighten my focus. And I'm going to say illuminate room.
Nice. Illumination would be a charm roll. Illuminate room. I think that's, yeah, that's probably a smell. A spell. Smell. Smell spell. Yes.
It might not be a spell, but I'm more focusing what I want on, you know, because I do have forest magic normally, so. Very good. You know, just. Let's see what happens.
I was going to call it a 10. That's an 11, because you're dealing with magical darkness here. And an 11, that's going to succeed. And in a nature-y kind of way, I want to assume that you summon.
So what happens is these vines sprout from my wand and attach themselves to the ceiling, and almost like a moonflower open up, and a little glistening ball of light emerges from it and floats all around the room, multiple different bits that just keep dripping out of the flowers and creating more light orbs.
In this room, you've now covered it in light. Marrow is smaller. His shadow is now half the size. Still extremely huge, but half the size. And from his shadow, you hear,
Marrow Wilson.
Marrow Wilson.
Marrow Wilson.
And then from this, like, cutaway in the room, this, like, shadow turns into, like, this demon-looking thing that's all black. You ever seen, like, Kingdom Hearts? It's got, like, yellow eyes, but it's, like, all black, and it's, like, half the size, and it's avoiding the light. And there's just, like, one little section where it's over there, and it just bursts.
Oh, darling, you're wonderful. Look at you. You're beautiful. Give us a wink, darling.
Do you want to roll me a charm or what?
Sure, why not?
Sure, because that's clever. Difficulty 14. That's an 8.
14, you absolute bastard.
You're trying to convince a demon to wink.
Can I help her?
You can if you want.
Can I help her?
Yeah.
Plus 10.
Plus 10. The demon
winks.
So that's
an 18.
Into the mirror and then can't stop winking left and right, different eyes. And it's like,
Marrow Wilson! Merrill Wilson!
Just got to make the cursed things work for you.
Scoutmaster Wildthorn, what do you do?
Seeing that it is now blinking and knowing that I am, if light is the key here, I think Scoutmaster is, you know, again, almost in a panic trying to think of what to do, pulls out their pipe and, like, lights like a light from it, and in doing so, like, goes to, like, light it, and all of a sudden these embers start floating through the air, almost like just like this, almost like very ashen light effect. And I'm hoping, because if you ever stare at a light and then blink, you get those little, like, flash floater things.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to kind of make that happen, so the demon literally it's a demon of darkness, but all it can see is light. And so I'm hoping that maybe
I think that's really cool. I want to say that when the embers come out, Wildthorn sees them, and then you control them, like, with your hand, like you're, like, moving the embers towards the demon. And I would like you to make me a roll to control these embers here. I'm just saying, this is another charm roll, and we'll call it a 12. That's more than a 12.
It's a 19.
Very good. So you move these embers towards the demon, and it's blinking its eyes, and it's like,
Marrow Wilson!
And then its voice gets a little bit more high-pitched as the shadow creature shrinks.
Marrow Wilson!
Marrow, what do you do?
I'm going to try and, like, turn it around. All they're going to hear is, and I'm going to grab the shadow by the neck, and I'm going to try and stuff it back into the doll, just, like, forcefully.
Stay badass. Make me a brawn roll, difficulty 12.
11. I use an adversity token to add one.
Nice. Okay. Your adversity token, it's like the shadow darkness that's left from the thing helps you and gives you strength. And I'll allow you to explain how it happens.
So it's like I'm trying to just put the shadow back into the doll. Like I'm realizing it's not really going. So out of anger, I pull out my wand and I like go to cast like a darkness upon darkness to push the darkness back into the darkness of the doll. So all the black ichor goes over top of the shadow and like just kind of seeps it and forces it back into the doll.
Nice. Okay. Wildthorn, you being the, you know, the professor of this, make me a brains check real quick, just 14, just to see if you know how to reseal this object.
Yeah, so how many adversity tokens would that take?
I think it, well, it would take 8. So you fail, you get to take an adversity token. And as you're writhing over this thing, trying to figure out how to re-encapsulate it, bursting out of the wardrobe is Professor Drelga. And she waves her wand and she says, "Your name is taken. It will not be the same. You shall no longer have a name. Only those of fame. Remove thy Artemis." And she pulls out like this little bit of light from it with her wand. And then she flicks it out the window. And she goes, "That's enough for today, class. Congratulations, everyone. I will see you next week. Please remember not to touch cursed objects, and when told not to give a doll a name, please don't do so. Thank you."
The name was written on the doll. It's not my fault.
I'm leading around, I was like, "Don't worry, Mr. Wilson. I thought that was absolutely bull."
I don't know, I feel like I've proved my point very well, is that you just have to use a cursed object to your advantage.
Very good, Tilly. Like, honestly, like, y'all get it more than most of these kids. Y'all are gonna be fine.
Professor Drelga approaches you as everyone is leaving Scoutmaster. And she says, "I hope you've learned from this example, students are not to be trusted."
I feel like, you know what? Part of me really wanted to tell you that this was your fault as an educator to not verify the safety of your own classroom. And maybe, just maybe, you should actually, you know, think about the students and their well-being instead of, you know, just being a willy-nilly half-ass professor.
Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn, if you have an issue with the way that I teach my classes, you may submit it to the headmaster. As you're leaving, she says that.
I'll have you know that he shows up in front of my door every morning in his underwear. We're on a very close name basis. Good day.
He is underwear. Good lord. As you guys step out of the classroom, you guys are going to head now, of course, to your very next class, which just so happens to be the class Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn is going to be teaching today. But as you step out of the classroom, the windows rattle around you violently, and magical torches flicker erratically, and the floor briefly shakes, pulsing like a heartbeat. And then a moment later, everything settles.
Oh, my bad. I turn around and I look at the door and be like, "Thank you, darling. Sorry, I didn't mean to make you upset by not saying goodbye."
So go to touch the door. Why don't you make me a grit roll real quick, Tilly?
All right. Where's my grit?
It's the very bottom. Nothing crazy. Nothing crazy. Ooh. It's a 12. Very good. So, as you touch the door, next to the door, there's a bookshelf. And off of that bookshelf, the shaking of the castle, a book, an enchanted book, flutters to the ground out of the bookshelf, and then it opens to a random page that reads, as you look down at it, it reads, "The awakening draws near." And then the words burn away before anyone else can read them.
Professor Scoutmaster Wildthorn, I think some hot garbagey shit is coming.
Yeah, no, I've been feeling it since, like, 3 days ago. Hey, Mero, I'm not ratting you out.
Yeah, Scoutmaster.
Just by the way, it's between you and me.
Oh, there's nothing to rat me out about. I think I'm being a really awesome student. I'm, like, nailing these spells. And to be honest, I feel like I had the most hands-on training in that whole first item class compared to anybody else.
We'll talk more in this next class. Don't worry. Oh, wait. Tilly's back. Hold on.
You three are now headed together to Wildthorn's first lesson. And Wildthorn himself, the professor, leads you to their
class, the place that they have designated to teach their class, the place that they have asked for specifically to teach a class, whether that's inside, in the forest, in the castle, in the city. Wildthorn is teaching a class somewhere in this world, on the pitch of the sports arena. We don't know, but Wildthorn is leading you there. Where do you lead the students to, Wildthorn?
So, this university is, again, very chaotic. It seems that where you mean to go is not where you mean to go. So, honestly, I tell the students that we are going to go to my classroom, but in order to get to my classroom, you must will yourself there. So, what I would like you to do is you must close your eyes and just walk straight. Even if you think you're about to hit a wall, just continue walking. Do not open your eyes. And whenever you feel like you are happy is when you will open your eyes and you shall be in my classroom.
What if you're clinically depressed?
You will feel happy.
What if you never felt happiness in your life?
Boy, howdy, are you in for a treat.
All right.
And what basically I would imagine this magic happens is as you walk your mind.
Oh, can instigate these two students, along with a couple others, close their eyes and begin walking forward. Wildthorn, you walk in the back of the pack with the opportunity to cast magic on these students to transport them wherever you think they should be before they arrive there. Their eyes are completely closed and they cannot see you, but they all walk in unison. What do you do?
Perfect. I kind of just hoped that, again, because my whole class and the reason that I'm teaching it is kind of just the way that they teach magic here is dumb. So I'm kind of literally like, I want the students to actually feel like they're going to a class they want to go to. And I'm hoping that by closing their eyes, they are able to manifest magically what their version of happiness is in their own brain. And it could be different for each student. But as soon as that thought hits their brain, and as soon as they're able to make peace with it,
a Patronus charm. And I would like you to roll me a magic check. But instead of anything else, this is like you reading their auras, their minds almost. Like bubbles are going to appear above their heads. And you can see what they think this good class is, kind of thing. I wish it was a general magic check. 14. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
General
magic. General magic. Okay. Wildthorn, you can see your, I'm going to say, six students. You can see bubbles above their heads of where they think happiness should be. Like you've pulled it out of them. Like I said, like a Patronus charm. What do you see?
Well, I kind of want, for the three random students, one of them thinks happiness is like being really good at our flying broom game and then becoming a cop, which I think is really, really weird. there's another kid that honestly, I don't know what his gig is, but he kind of wants to drive around in an ice cream truck. And you know what? That's fine. Do whatever you want to do, man. And then the third girl, she's got this really frumpy hair. It seems like all she wants to do is just learn forever and just study forever. And for some reason, she's just so horny for books. It's a little weird. So, I've got these three weirdos in my class. And then I look over to these two and, I kind of would like them to describe what their version of happiness is, at least at this moment.
Who would you like first?
Let's go with, of course, Tilly first.
Tilly's moment of happiness in her own brain is becoming a chaotic sorceress / the wizard, whatever you want, magic user that can command the very whims of the universe and open portals and summon animals and just absolute chaos at any time and being able to be one with it and understand it.
Beautiful. From this beautiful, happy, like, thought bubble, I turn over to Mr. Olsen.
Marrow's thought bubble is going to be, it starts off as like a, like, kind of like a burnt tree in a barren wasteland. And then suddenly, like, as if like 50 years sped up over time, you see the tree go from like burnt to on fire, then being put out and then being like a luscious tree as if it went back in time. And then it's just kind of like bird chirps and this one peach tree.
All right. And so from that, I would say they would open their eyes and they would see that, weirdly enough, it looks like we are about 150 feet above the school. Mm. And there seems to be almost like a cloud floor underneath us. And we seem to be in a cloud classroom, if you will, where all of the furniture is made of different cumulus and, you know, different rays of light come through that seem to, you know, cast different shapes and cause different mists. Right. And so,
right. Yeah. Cool. All of you guys arrive there. I would also like to say there are desks made out of clouds, and some of them, you know, a little toppled over, a little bit sideways, kind of floating. I also would like to think that there is it's like an amalgamation. They didn't know what you were really going to be teaching, so they provided you with a lot of different kinds of objects and stuff. So there's also a, like, training area with a large stage. It's good for spell practices and other kinds of stuff like that. And, the four students there, you only described three, but there are four. So one of them's a short little kid with brown hair, and he pipes up and he says, "Hi, I'm Sheldon. Everyone always forgets me." And then the cop kid steps forward and says, "Hello, I'm Thaddeus Breitenbach, the fanciest lad. I'm here to learn of your class."
Sure. Wonderful.
You step to the front of the class as all of them take their seats. Scoutmaster Wildthorn, and what is your lecture?
Students, welcome. I honestly wish I could have had you at the beginning of the day, but I was unfortunately called to another class. Welcome to Magic and Rethinking of Magic 101. This class is for students. Don't mind breaking all the rules. In fact, if you are in this class, you're going to break every rule ever imaginable. You're going to potentially be expelled from the school if you stay in this class. I want to make that clear. So if you don't want to be in this class, you should totally leave now, because I will get you kicked out if you stay.
I think Thaddeus stands up and says, "Yeah, this is bullshit." And then he goes, "What was Descendo earlier?"
The reverse of Levitatus. It's Sua Tartaville.
So he stands up and he goes, "Sua Tartaville." And he disappears through the clouds. And Sheldon's like,
I'm gonna start a revolution.
I'll look over to the weird redheaded kid, and the frumpy girl is like, are the two of you going to follow your cop friend? Y'all seem to always be together.
Frumpy girl's like, No, I'm not following you. We roommates, not the same, actually. Here to learn. Absolutely. And she flips open a book, ready to take notes. And the redheaded kid's like, it's on my schedule.
Awesome. All right. Well, for those of you who stayed, congratulations. You've already passed the first test. You know, cheers all around. You get, like, whatever the equivalent of an A. You already are Sick. Thinking outside of the proverbial box, if you will. What I teach you in this class will not get you expelled, possibly. But it's a metaphor, Mr. Wilson. So here is the thing. They will tell you, what is this? Please answer me. Can anyone tell me what this is? Yes, Sheldon.
He called my name. A wand?
Yes, Sheldon, is a wand. And what do we do with a wand? Anybody? Mr. Wilson.
I just had it.
No.
We cast things with it.
Very good, Mr. Wilson. Yes, we cast things with it. Now, what if I did this and I kind of, like, almost go to break the wand and they see it crack a little bit and there's, like, a little bit of gold that just kind of flickers. I'm like, And I throw it to the ground and I do coffee, please. And I'm willing a cup of coffee to come to me. I'm basically, it's what an Accio would be, I guess, in Harry Potter world. But again, we're not touching that. So
I would say Charm 10 is a roll. But you can half that in an automatic.
I will half it. Oh, I didn't even mean to click that.
All right. And a cup of coffee is wheeled in front of you.
No wand.
Sheldon's like,
now.
Now, does a wand help your focus on a spell if you're not good at it?
Only in your mind. to me at least. Everyone is different and it takes people sometimes a long time to practice this, but to me, this is one of the purest forms of magic. Now, I must tell you, students, that if you practice this in front of other professors here at the university, they are not as open to this form of magic because they do feel that students must be, can't say restrained, students must be, yes, Sheldon.
I have a power without a wand. I can become invisible. No one sees me.
Finally. All right, yes. So Sheldon here has decided to open up. And that is something that is very important to the magical world. Because honestly, a lot of wizards, witches, warlocks, and people of magic, you know, as Bum, you know, would say, mystics. Sometimes we all have unique abilities. Sometimes we have things that just make us special. Sometimes we're just good at one very particular thing. For me, I love nature. I love the essence of it, but I also love the what we break nature down to, because some people think nature is just plants and animals and things that grow, but no, nature is existence. This city, if you look down below you, is one big organism that is brimming with life. There's cultures, there's laws, there's underbellies, there's people conniving. There's a tavern down there where you can literally tell a story for free drinks.
Very good segue. As you all look down to the city, there are three cockatrices flying to the clouds. And as they arrive, stepping off of one of the cockatrices is Professor Hex. And she goes, Wildthorn, your classroom... I meant to sit in on this class today, but I could not find your classroom.
It's so hard to find sometimes, especially, you know, if you're having a bad day. You know, I understand the difficulty. I apologize for that. But yes, glad you made it. Of course, we will always be here. This is where the classroom is.
And then also stepping off of a cockatrice is the companion, the animal handler professor.
Periwinkle. Miss Periwinkle.
Miss Periwinkle steps off and she goes, hi, hello, Thorn. This is beautiful.
Yes, thank you, Miss Periwinkle. Of course, we aim to please. I'm glad you got my invitation. And of course, I'm glad your cockatrice found you. Yeah. You just happened upon Hexbirth, too. How fortunate
well,
for us all.
Yeah, she came to me and said she needed to fly, and sorry about that.
No, not at all. Well, this way, ladies.
She's like, continue your class.
So, children, using wands is, of course, the most important thing you can do at this university. Never cast magic without your wand, for that is what everyone should know. And Sheldon, I'm going to use magic and already tell you what you're going to say, and the answer is no. Marrow, I'm just going to say hold it. As we continue this class again, I want you all to know that everything I say is true, and everything I say definitely means what I'm telling you. So,
magic.
And I guess at this point, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. I am sure? going to cast a, yep, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it without my wand, because again, I'm just gestating with it and actually casting with my other hand. I wish to cast a sleep spell on Hexworth.
Oh, geez.
Have her nod off in my class.
Nice. Okay.
So I can actually teach.
All right. I believe in this system, almost all the roles are player forward, right? So I don't really need to make a save. This is like you need to make a high check.
Yes, I need to make a very high check. Probably.
Okay, so we're going to call it a 20.
And I am studied in charm, so whatever I roll here, I can add a plus 3 to.
Oh, that's a 25.
Plus 3, 28.
And Hexworth nods off. She goes, it's a good plan.
Right, and I'll kind of give Periwinkle a little bit of a wink just out of the corner of my eye and continue lecturing. So, yes, wands, completely useless and absolutely dumb. Sometimes even, yes, Sheldon.
You just said to use them.
Yes, Hexworth was awake, and she doesn't like me at all. So I didn't want her to hear what I was teaching, so I lied while she's... Yeah, she just fell asleep. She does sometimes, even though she tries to hate me, she just naturally falls asleep whenever I talk. It's the craziest thing.
Now, I was gonna say, while Sheldon's looking perplexed, I'm gonna be like, Sheldon, has anybody ever told you you have beautiful eyes?
No.
Well, you do. They're exquisitely green. I love the look of them. They're like fresh cut grass in the forest.
Thanks. Wow. I don't know how to process that.
But if you ever need any help processing, I would say you can always find me in the dining hall sometime.
Okay.
And we can discuss it.
I'm feeling very weird.
Carry on, Professor.
Class over.
Sheldon, no, not quite yet. I have two quick more things to say. And make sure that you remember these students, because they will be brought about in our next lecture, okay? So pay attention. As I was saying, each of us have things that make us unique. Some of these things, some people would say, are good and must be, you know, nurtured. And some of them would say, ooh, this is bad, and you should warn us about it, for it is evil, and we must stop it before it becomes even more evil, right? Life is a balance. There is both good and bad, and even though you may have bad within you, it is how you use it is what matters at the end. So I am of the opinion that in this class, I wish for you to learn what it is that makes you you, and try to think of your magic in a way that maybe a wand is but a training means to your own magical happily ever after. You find a way to make your legacy one immortal, one that will help you, I don't know, live forever. I want you to be able to...
What if we don't want to live forever, Scoutmaster?
Well, Marrow, I would say that if you ever were in some random situation where you had to just live forever, worry about that when it happens.
When you say, when it happens, Professor Hex wakes up. She goes, very good class. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you, Professor Hexworth. As always, we enjoy having you in our class. And remember, students, wand safety. We will be discussing that next week. Thank you all very, very much. And have a magical day.
Nice. Nice. And I think
Sheldon, darling, where are you? Where are you? Your dorms. What dorms are you in? What floor?
You follow Sheldon over to, I think, like, appearing is like this cloud staircase that goes all the way down to the ground, and you guys are walking down it together, leaving the professors up at the top. And as you're walking, Sheldon's like, yours.
Yes, but what floor? You're on the same floor as us.
I was sleeping right next to you last night.
You're our roommate.
Yeah.
Oh, Marrow, we found our roommate.
What do you mean found?
Really? Where?
I was right there. Like, Meryl was having nightmares, and like, I like comforted him, and like, I was eating bacon and stuff with you guys. And
oh, my darling, I think you might have had your invisibility activated.
I didn't. People don't see me.
That sounds outlandish. I'm usually a very keen eye. Well, I'll make sure to notice you from now on, because okay. You're quite intriguing.
All right. Well, let's walk together. Show me the way. And you turn to Marrow and you give him the side eye, like, ugh. And then you look back, Sheldon's gone. Professor Hexworth approaches you, Wildthorn. She goes, you didn't light anything on fire. Your students are all alive, be that only 6 signed up for your class. I assume more will sign up as time goes on. You know, the great word gets sent
unfortunately,
around.
Unfortunately,
very good.
The tall one, he quit. Already, I did have one student drop.
You did have one drop. She writes it down. She's like, hopefully more come. By the end of the semester, we're hoping that you at least have 10 students. If you want to teach again next year, you must at least have 10 students by the end of this year. And please, Thorn, next time, use the classrooms.
Oh, I did. This is my classroom.
In the college, Thorn?
Sure. Come find me next time.
Okay. Thank you. And she sits on the cockatrice. She's like, let's go. And it flutters its wings and it flies.
I'll do all of a sudden, like, we're up in the clouds and I'm just kind of sitting there in the quiet. And I wave my hand and all the classroom stuff goes away. And I wave my hand and all of a sudden there's like a whole like different scene. I wave my hand and there's a whole other different scene. I'm just kind of like, it's almost like I'm scrolling through different options. And then I summon Billy. And I go, I think this one. Yeah, I don't think she could find us here. What do you think? Oh, I think it could be good. Okay, let's do it. And I'll use my wand and you'll just see, like, actually him use his wand, but not like to cast. He just kind of stabs it into the cloud real quick. And it's like lightning shoots out real quick and it'll cut.
Cool. All right. Continuing on. Marrow, how do you finish?
Gonna go back to the dorms. And then Marrow's just kind of thinking about that happy place that he went back to, trying to understand, and he's going to go back to his dorms. He's going to open up that second trunk with all those parchments, kind of go through them, and he's going to pull out one parchment that has a drawing of that burnt peach tree. And he just kind of stares at it, and then he's going to go and lay in his bed, fully clothed, boots on and everything, and just kind of weep himself to sleep.
Oh, damn. Tilly?
Well, now that I'm aware that he exists, I'm now, like, hyper, like, paranoid that I don't notice him. So as it comes round to dinner time, I'm going to be like, Sheldon, what would you like for dinner, darling?
As you say I'll that, he's sitting, order. Like, right next to you, and he's like, I don't know, mashed potatoes.
Do you like grilled cheese?
Do you?
I do.
I've only ever had, like, leftover mashed potatoes, because that's, like, what people don't eat. And, like, because people don't make food for me. So, like, it's just, like, so I've never had anything, like, fresh, like.
Oh, well then, darling, let me, I've got you. Excuse me, owl.
Hoo-hoo.
Hello, could we have a large helping of mashed potatoes with a bit of ground turkey and a couple of grilled cheese sandwiches with some pepper jelly, a nice warm cup of tomato soup, and a couple of fizzy drinks, possibly apple or grape would be lovely.
He's like, hoo-hoo, can do. And then on the table, it just slowly starts to appear as it, like, just, it's, like, made, like, fresh as it appears, like, as if someone down in the kitchen just made it, prepared it, and sent it, and it just appears instantly.
Here we are, Sheldon, and Sheldon, take my hand. Let's go sit together.
And you're like, what? You're like, take my hand. And then he's like, okay. And he just appears, and he, like, grabs your hand.
What race are you, darling? What species are you?
I'm just a normal... I don't know what normal is. I'm just human. My mom was human.
What about your father?
I don't know exactly who my father was because no one told me who my father was. My mom actually gave birth to me and then kept forgetting that I was there.
And did she remember anything about your father? Or is it was just blank as well? I wonder if it has something to do with your lineage.
Maybe.
That people do not perceive you.
Maybe I'm not just human. Maybe, well... Let's try this food.
Yes, let's sit down. And I'm actually going to make up a little plate and put it by Mero's bed for him, just nice. In case he gets a little bit peaky in the evening.
Nice. I think it's cute. And I think you guys eat together and Sheldon enjoys it. It's been a lot, you know, I don't think he's ever really had hot food in his life. And totally side character, not trying to make him a main character. But hey, everybody's got to love Sheldon. And that's where we're going to end the episode for tonight. That's it. Heck yeah. Everybody watching on YouTube, subscribe, and we'll be back for episode 3 very soon. All right, see you then. See you then. Description has everything. Thank you.